Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on Jake and Stacy, very excited about this guest. It is Albert Breer on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Albert, I have so many places I want to start. I guess I'll just I'll start with Julio Jones. I know we're going to get into plenty of Seahawks conversation, but in one of your MMQB, I think it was the Monday afternoon quarterback column, you talked about some potential landing spots for Julio, the difficulty of where he could go, and one of the more fascinating parts was you talking about, hey, Julio's been dealing with foot and knee injuries for a while. The Falcons' offense has adapted to that, but will he be the same in another offense? Where do you think he lands? Yeah. Do you think a trade happens this offseason?
Well, I mean, I think there's a foot and knee and hamstring. For any team that's going to bring him in, because, you know, if it plays to his longevity, I think the other thing that's sort of an interesting twist to this that people don't pay much attention to is he's needed to be managed the last few years, you know? And so, like, how do you manage that going forward? And if you're another team, are you okay bringing in a guy who may not practice all the time? Because that might be what it takes to keep him where he needs to be. And then, you know, you look at that, it's like, okay, like, what's the standard with the rest of your players? Are you going to have trouble, you know, teaching him your system, assimilating him with your quarterback, all of that different stuff that the Falcons didn't have to worry about because they had the guy there for 10 years. So that's just sort of a side thing a side piece to the whole, you know, picture with Julio Jones. I personally, you know, believe that if somebody had offered a first-round pick, he'd be on that team right now, you know, or at least a deal would have been agreed to pending June 1st. You know, and I think it's interesting looking at some of the suitors here. I think the Raiders would do it. I wonder where they're at from a cash standpoint. You know, the Packers, I think he'd be the perfect olive branch to get Aaron Rodgers back in there. But I just look at their cap situation, how tight they are against the salary cap. And, you know, I'm not sure that one is going to happen. It'd be great to see, like, that be the resolution there. You know, and I think New England is sort of working. Their interest so far has been tepid, but the Bills always looking for a bargain. And so I think because of where the salary cap is and cash budgets across the league, it's hard to find too long a list of teams that are going to be willing to do it. Doesn't mean he's not a great player. It's just, I think at this juncture in the calendar, it's hard to find teams that really fit, which, you know, quite honestly is a big reason why the Falcons haven't been able to find a partner to this point.
Right. And Albert, the next question I have for you is you talked about if they were offered a first, they would do it right now. Is that even realistic? I mean, given the fact that teams are going to have to take on a pretty sizable contract for Julio Jones, does that lessen his value to other teams where you could see him as maybe a second or even a third, draft pick traded for him?
Yeah, and I think like the important thing to and I know people will look at it and say, well, you know, he's as good a player as Khalil Mack, or he's as good a player as Jalen Ramsey, and why shouldn't he bring home what those guys brought home? I just tell people to look at the age of those guys when they were traded. You know, like all those guys were traded when they were 26, 27, 28 years old. Julio's 32. And I think the way you have to look at a first-round pick and the way teams look at first-round picks is this is a guy that we're going to have at an affordable rate who's going to be a core member of our team, and he's going to be cheap for the next, you know, what, 4 or 5 years, where in turn you're bringing in somebody who's already expensive, who could want more money down the line, and, you know, like you don't know how long he's going to be at the level that he's been at. Again, that's nothing against that's no sort of indictment on who Julio is as a player. We all know how great he is, but you know the fact is trade compensation. It's not a career achievement award. You know, it's what you're going to do for the team that you're coming to going forward.
Right.
And I think some doubt maybe on where Julio is going to be physically in 2022 and 2023 at 33, 34 years old. That's why, you know, teams aren't willing to line up and hand over a first-round pick for a player who even a couple of years ago clearly would have been worth one.
Albert, one of the other really unique stories of this offseason has been watching the transition from teams going for preparing for another COVID virtual offseason to all of a sudden, hey, the CDC has different recommendations. Masks and vaccines are changing the conversation in terms of mask wearing and testing and all that, and the ability to have the NFL function in the offseason again, and players going, wait, hold up. I was ready for a virtual offseason here, Albert. We don't want to do that. What have you seen be the dynamic between the league and the players in this process between trying to get the vets back and the vets pushing back on this?
Yeah, and Jake, I think it's sort of complex. You know, like I think it started as a COVID thing, and that was where the negotiations lifted off. And the union back in February and March, I mean, remember, we were still, I think most of the country, we were still in the thick of then. And so I started to look at what the differences were. And physically, there were two differences. There was, they weren't on the field in the spring, and there was a ramp-up period in the summer. And so, you know, I think at that point, there was sort of this decision that was made as the conversation moved off of COVID into how do we make this better for ourselves, period? And how can we wield power to make that happen so we're all physically in a better place? And, you know, the league wasn't having it, so then what ended up happening was the players made those statements, like, we're staying away, we're not going to show up for off season, and that in turn got the coaches to say, well, wait a second, we need you guys in here, we need to build towards the season. That sparked negotiations between coaches and players, and now coaches are getting to hear what their players' concerns were and how the veteran players want some more time off the legs and want to stop putting mileage in their body by spring. And that's where you're seeing all these agreements now where a lot of teams are turning their 11-on-11 work from full speed in the spring into walkthrough pace. And so that's what's kind of cool about it, Jake. And I really think you see now where the players took this whole thing and kind of realized there are some things that we'd rather, you know, there's a way we'd rather do it in the spring, and we can all agree on that. And let's see if we can take a stand here. And it really kind of made it go from a league union negotiation into a player coach negotiation, where I think a lot of the coaches were amenable to the idea of taking care of their players better with the hope that that'll mean they'll have healthier teams when they get to the fall.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey. Stacey Rust and Jake Heaps here, and we're talking with senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Albert, we got two bits of NFL news this morning just from the owners. One was the cap information for 2022, and another was that there are some changes in, I think, roster cutdown dates. Can you tell us what we need to know about those two?
Yeah, so the salary cap, they've set a ceiling for next year. This is 2022 at $208.2 million. I think that basically confirms what most teams were planning for, which was the cap is going to remain, you know, relatively flat. Like it's not going to explode next year and it's not going to go back to, you know, where it would have been pre-COVID. So there's another year where the teams and the players are going to have to deal with that before the new TV money kicks into the equation in 2023. So functionally, what does that mean? You know, I think that means you're going to see going forward, teams are going to be a little more conservative financially. And when you see new contracts done, it's going to be interesting to see how much of the money is dumped into 2023, 2024, because teams will expect the cap to go up then. The cutdown stuff is interesting, too, and this is a little kind of inside baseball, but, you know, there are going to be three cutdowns now instead of one. It's going to be after the first preseason game, 90 to 85, after the second preseason game, 85 to 80, and then after the third preseason game, 80 to 53. And I've already talked to a couple of teams that aren't pleased about this because they're now going to be losing opportunities to see guys on the field who might be practice squad candidates, who might be tryout candidates when you actually get to the season. So they're going to lose some evidence on some of those players. And if you want to be cynical about it, and, you know, Jake, I know you are in an NFL camp, so you understand this. Like, there's at least a cynical take out there that's along the lines of, owners don't want to see players at the end of the roster getting hurt in the last preseason game because that means they're going to have to pay them. So,
correct.
So, like, you know, there's some stuff going on there where I know the football people aren't pleased because they're not going to see these guys, but the owners are happy because they're not at risk of having to pay these guys over the course of the year if they get hurt at the end of the preseason.
Yeah, I think that would be something that I think owners are definitely taking into account. And I may or may not have come across players who have been in situations like my own trying to make rosters, like think about it or joke about it. Like, is there a way that I can hurt myself so I can get that injury settlement? I know I'm not going to make this roster. That's right. Like, can I figure out a way to make this happen?
Yeah, once you realize that you're not going to make the team, maybe your ankle starts bothering you a little bit, right?
That's right. Oh, man, my hammies are really getting me, Albert. You know, it is a unique aspect, and that's one of the things that's been kind of frustrating to me personally with the players and with the top, you know, 1% essentially of the NFL players. For guys like Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Julio Jones, you know, you name it, the big stars of this league, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for them. And I get them advocating for themselves of not trying to get too much mileage on their body. But for the majority of the union, the majority of the league who's still trying to make their way onto this roster, it puts them at a very, very even greater disadvantage. Yeah. You know, Albert, my question to you is, do you actually foresee these changes actually happening from not just this year, or do you see this happening from here on out?
So I think this is something that, like, I could see, like, the GM subcommittee or the coach subcommittee taking up. And one interesting idea that I think would work, and it has been batted around in the past, but the idea of maybe having, like, a developmental phase of the spring, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion on this, Jake, like where maybe guys of 3 years of experience and less get an extra 3 weeks of work. So the coaches get to see them and they get to develop. And then the guys who need to be off their legs are off their legs. You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah.
I've heard ideas like that batted around where, you know, maybe you just put a service years limit on it and say, all right, these 4 weeks of the spring are designated for guys who have 4 years experience in the league or less. And so now those guys get a chance to show what they've got and develop, and the coaches get a chance to see those guys. And a lot of the guys who already know they're probably going to be on the team get a chance to, you know, give their bodies a little bit more of a rest.
Yeah, to me that makes the most sense in this situation. You know, you're having veteran players that are fighting for their rest and recovery, but you have this other group that needs to be out there. And I think that's probably the best of both worlds when you talk about it, Albert. And I think that's probably the best way for it to get done. And I hope that they can come to that resolution, because just simply wiping out the off-season activities over the next, you know, I mean, taking out a huge chunk of it, I don't think it's going to be the answer, nor is the NFL how business savvy they are. I mean, we talk about these practices, we go through them, we watch them, we evaluate them. The NFL doesn't want to lose that media buzz, you know, when they get that in May, June, March.
And that's the thing, like, that's a great point, Jake, because, like, you know, they're what they want to own the calendar, right? And if you really think about it, if you don't have OTAs and mini camps in May and June, I mean, you're really talking about a 3 month gap there between the draft and then the start of training camp. And so there's no question that that's a factor, that the owners, the league office, like, they want people talking about football in May and June. And one way to do it is to get guys on the field and get the media out there covering them.
Albert, obviously we know you, Jake, and you have a good relationship. You and I have been great friends for at least 15 minutes now. And so I'm hoping that just like friend to friend, I can get kind of, you know, an honest perspective. Now, I want you to be blatantly honest as from the outside, you know, switching gears here. What do you think the Seahawks odds are in the NFC West?
So I think the Niners right now have the best roster in the NFC West. I think a lot of where they end up is going to be contingent on health. What does Nick Bosa look like coming off the ACL? How does Jimmy Garoppolo recover from the ankle injury? And come back knowing that he's got the third overall pick breathing down his neck. So, like, when I look at it from a talent standpoint, I think right now, like, San Francisco, that team getting the Super Bowl 2 years ago, that wasn't a fluke. And if they can stay healthy and a couple things break right, I think that could be a 13 or 14 win team. And I think that everyone else in the divisions, sort of where the rest of the division goes, is going to hinge on what happens with a couple of things in San Francisco. And so I think Seattle is probably right back in that 11-12 win range. And it's hard for me math-wise to conceptualize, like, that doesn't mean 12-4 anymore. That means 12-5. It doesn't mean 11-5 anymore. It means 11-6. But I think they're probably right in the range where they were last year. And you'd like to think maybe the secondary comes together a little bit there. That, you know, Jamal Adams, they've learned how to use him a little bit better on offense. You know, Gabe Jackson makes a difference on the offensive line. So, you know, I think the Seahawks have reason to believe they should be right back where they were last year. And I think the Rams are sort of right in that group with them, with Arizona, I think, kind of chasing the other three. So I would tell you, I think San Francisco going in should be the favorite. But there are a couple of variables that could swing that one way or the other. And the Seahawks and the Rams aren't far behind where I think the Niners should be.
Love the honesty and amazing insight anyways. I don't need to tell you guys, but you should be reading Albert's work. You should be reading the MMQB. And all of you already know, but it's Albert Breer we've been talking to at Albert Breer. Give him a follow if you aren't already. Albert, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, it is 12:15-ish, kind of. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down to you, Jake. Why does Michael Robinson's quarterback list still have you so infuriated?
I'm sorry. I'm sure people are over this by now.
Jake woke up thinking about it.
I'm thinking about it. One, because I still don't understand how you could leave Russell Wilson off your list. But also, let's go to cut number two. Another reason why he left off another prominent quarterback off his top five.
Because this was the top quarterbacks going into 2021. They didn't say the quarterback who was going to win a Super Bowl. If that was the question, Tom Brady would have been Tom Brady.
I'm sorry, what? What do we play this game for? We play it to win a Super Bowl. That's what you get judged off of. And Tom Brady is the GOAT without question. Yeah, statistically, he's going to pass Drew Brees in passing yards at some point this season. Statistically, Tom Brady's been able to put up, you know, tremendous numbers. But why is he without a doubt the greatest of all time? Because of Super Bowl wins. And how do you have Tom Brady out of your top five when he is taking the Buccaneers to a Super Bowl? He is a Super Bowl favorite again this year and showed that he can beat Father Time, having another really good season statistically. Him and Tom Brady and Russell Wilson tied second in the league in passing touchdowns last season with 40. And I still see some of, you know, people coming back at me with my tweet yesterday that I put out there with Michael Robinson and saying, well, gosh, Jake, Russ didn't do this, Russ didn't do that in the second half of the season. I get it. I fully understand. But that doesn't automatically make their quarterback outside the top five when he is a definitively top five talent. And a guy that you're not going to see that second half skid like we saw from Russell Wilson this season. I can promise you that.
Second down. Stacy.
DJ.
Albert Breer was just on with us mere moments ago, and he talked about the NFL's new roster cutdown. Could you please explain this a little bit more?
I sure can. So we all remember back in the day when there were essentially two roster cutdown dates. You'd go from 90 to 75, and then from 75 to your final 53. Well, then it changed. You were going from basically 90 to 53. And so during roster cutdown dates, you'd have like almost 40 players. You'd have like 30-something on players who were suddenly out of a job trying to find new teams. But I think that coaches liked it because it gave them more time to decide what to do with players who are on the bubble or competing for depth positions. Now, the NFL owners have voted on a rule that institutes new roster cutdown dates, not just two, but three of them. So you're adding one more from what you had before. So this is what it's going to look like now. And keep in mind, you've got three preseason games as opposed to four from now on. And so this aligns very closely with the schedule of those three preseason games. You've got Tuesday, August 17th, cutting down from 90 to 85. Tuesday, August 24th, cutting down from 85 to 80. Basically, like, the Tuesday, or essentially after every preseason game. And then August 31st is the cut down from 80 to 53. This one is most notable, and I'll tell you why. Because normally those roster cutdowns to the final 53 would happen maybe just a week ahead of the first game or even in early September. Now you get like 10, 11, 12 days with your full roster to figure it out and kind of figure out what you're doing ahead of your week one. And it gives guys time who didn't make that roster to go to a new team and get an extra couple days to get to know that system. Coaches may not like that they have to make these cuts ahead of when they would normally want to. I personally like that those guys on the bubble are getting more time with a new team should they sign elsewhere.
Third down. Almost forgot what number came after two there. Sorry.
Are you Tom Brady? What's going on?
Jake, should fans be anticipating a Jamal Adams deal anytime now?
Yeah, let's go to cut number three here. We got Brady Henderson breaking this down.
You know, I think if you look at when they typically extend players with at least with 1 year left on their contract, it's typically May, June, July, and sometimes August. You know, Russell Wilson was an exception a couple years ago because he had set that April 15th deadline. Tyler Lockett was another exception this year. I think that was more for salary cap purposes because they needed the salary cap space that they ended up gaining by giving him a new deal. And so this is right around the time where that typically happens. And you know, I know from earlier in the offseason there was confidence they would get a deal done. The one hang up that I could see happening is if Adams is insistent on being paid like a pass rusher.
Now, to answer this very quickly and bluntly, no. Do not be waiting for a Jamal Adams deal to be done anytime, any minute, right this second. I think that this is going to play itself out throughout the summer. I've been very surprised to see how quiet this has been. I was anticipating Jamal Adams' conversation being more like how it was with Russell Wilson than it was with Bobby Wagner. Remember, Bobby Wagner, we didn't hear a peep about how the contract negotiations were going, what the numbers looked like, any of that stuff. And Jamal Adams, it's been very much the same thing at this point in time. So I would anticipate that Jamal Adams' deal won't get done until just before training camp.
We have a really awesome fourth down question. I'm going to have to push it into the timeline where we also have a really hilarious story about Trae Young and plus some updates on maybe the best feud in sports. We'll see about that. Before that, though, don't forget you have until the end of the day on May 31st. That is next Monday to enter to win a 710 ESPN Seattle smart speaker at 710sports.com/win. We're still giving them away every day in the month of May. Then all you have to do is say, play 710 ESPN Seattle to your brand new smart speaker and you can listen to our shows all day long. Enter our contest at 710sports.com/win. The timeline's coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. The match returns with Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady versus Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers. The feud continuing between Bryson and Brooks Koepka on Twitter with some amazing tweets. And shout out to Tom Brady for getting a lot of this started, making memes. So we all saw the video of Koepka being interviewed. Bryson walks behind him and he takes this deep sigh for what I can only assume is a very genuine dislike of Bryson DeChambeau. And the sports world erupted. Everyone loves a feud. Everyone loves just a ridiculous feud, not even like you got two of the best in the game going at it. You just had this very mundane moment of a guy walking behind another guy and the person being interviewed just, sorry, I lost my thought. I hate that guy. And it was fantastic. So Tom Brady decided to stir the pot by posting kind of screenshots of that with Brooks Koepka's face full of irritation and then using kind of different things. One was he was Aaron Rodgers when a field goal is called instead of going for a touchdown. It was fantastic. So the feud continues on Twitter with Brooks Koepka saying, sorry, bro, tagging Aaron Rodgers. Bryson DeChambeau DeChambeau replying, saying, it's nice to be living rent-free in your head. And my personal favorite, Phil Mickelson getting in on the action, saying, I feel like I'm in the middle of something and should step aside, except they want current PGA champs. Phenomenal.
I mean, Phil Mickelson wins. I mean, he wins again.
I think the two older people in this take it. Definitely.
You think so?
Yes.
I mean, look, the funny thing to me about this is that when you look at the situation for these two guys, it's not even that it's a friendly rivalry. It's not even that they are fierce competitors. It is legitimately that they can't stand each other. And really, it's more about Brooks Koepka than anything else. I think yes. Bryson DeChambeau is just one of those guys that probably is just really annoying. He's just annoying to be around. Yeah. He doesn't really understand that he pokes everybody and pushes everybody's buttons. It's just because it's who he is.
I can't relate.
But Brooks Koepka cannot stand. You can't? Okay, okay.
I don't know anyone like that.
Really, because... Mm-hmm. All right, I'm just not going to go there. So, so you know, I mean, that to me is the best part about it, but I can't wait to watch this play out because Phil Mickelson is way better of a trash talker than Bryson DeChambeau. So that's the only part that I am not looking forward to, whereas you had this amazing dynamic with Peyton and Tom and Tiger and Phil. I don't know if you're going to be able to recreate that same magic.
All right, the Pirates just did something against the Cubs that's straight out of a Little League game. The Cubs have a runner on second base, two outs. Javi Baez hits a grounder to third, and then...
Here's the 0-2 home, and a swing and a ground ball on to third base. He took a neck-high pitch and hit it on the ground to third. Now Baez running back toward home plate.
Tag him.
Tag him quickly. And what did Craig do there? They get a run out of that, and now they got to get the out at first. And they throw it into right field. That's going to get a run for the Cubs. Oh, my, what a loony play, and he's in at second base. Just tag him out. What was that? The Cubs are going to get a run, and Baez is safe at second base on a routine ground out to third.
I never approve booing in this case. Totally fine with it.
This is absolutely... This is absolutely insanity. If you want to go see the video, it's all over Twitter right now, but I had quote tweeted it on my Twitter at JTHeaps9 if you guys want to go check that out. But it is one of the most absurd mistakes I have ever seen. Two outs, ground out, throws it to first, and the first baseman doesn't step on the bag. He tries to go tag out Baez. Step on the bag, and the inning is over. Instead, you give up a run, and you allow Baez to get to second base.
It's very weird.
Bad news bears. It was one of the worst series of errors I have ever seen in baseball, ever.
Well, and it is straight out of Little League. I mean, quite literally, Jackson, your eldest, Jake, had a T-ball game, and you and Brooke posted a video from the event. Very adorable. All these kids playing T-ball. Jackson hits it. He runs to first. And then you have maybe the worst E3 I've ever seen. You have the first baseman, whoever that is, standing there holding up his arm like this, and the ball goes right over his head, and he just kind of looks at it. I mean, Jackson should have run for a double, but I guess that's not allowed.
Yeah. No, it's not allowed. They're teaching him bad habits. But, yeah, I mean, they got to teach the kid. They need to teach the kids to throw better to first base. You're absolutely right. I mean, Stacey, I just love the ruthlessness that you're watching this video and going, my gosh, these four-year-olds, they can't throw to first base.
This is ridiculous. Get this kid out of here. Trade him. Can you trade kids and little trade him? Get him out of here. Send them back down.
You draft them. At least when I was a little, you drafted them.
I'm sorry. Trade them. Listen to me. If your child is in Jake's son's T-ball league and he happens to play first base, I'm sorry. Look, I'm not very athletic either. All I'm saying is it's not that the potential isn't there. I'm not saying that. He's young. He's tiny. I mean, he's probably 3 feet tall. I just think it could have been better. That's all. Athletes are all about accountability.
Are you one of those people that you couldn't do it yourself so that when...
Eventually,
when you get the opportunity to coach kids, you are all over. This is your time to shine. It's coach time. Like, you're just going to grill these kids and send them packing, send them crying.
I'm sorry. Last time I checked, was Bill Belichick the best quarterback ever, or did he just coach the best quarterback ever? Yeah, you don't have to do that to be able to know exactly what a good first baseman looks like. It wasn't that. I mean, that's all I'm saying. Maybe that kid's better at other stuff.
You've got a point, but I'm also saying that, look, Stacey, they're 4 years old, okay? So give them some time before you start sending them packing and making them cry because they can't catch the ball or throw it to first base.
Jake, I didn't get to your four downs question. I want to make sure we do it because we got some good sound here. What are two things you want to see from Bobby Wagner this season?
Ooh, go to cut number four right off the top, DJ. Luke Kuechly was on with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks for an interview, and this is what he said. Linebackers, this is where they make their hay.
I'll be the first to say tackles are great. Somebody's got to tackle the ball carrier. But if you can affect the game at or behind the line of scrimmage and then in the pass game as a cover player, pass deflections, interceptions, I think that's where linebackers tend to separate themselves.
And so when you look at that particular area, the tackles for loss, you talk about pass coverage. Those are two areas for Bobby Wagner that I think can be better and should be better. He is absolutely physically still there, still has all the tools to be a great linebacker in this league. He's been fantastic. He's an all-pro, six-time all-pro. He's racked up the tackles. He's been excellent in terms of sacks and quarterback pressures, but I would like to see him get more tackles for loss. And part of that is being a linebacker, it's about what happens in front of you. It's about having a group of guys, particularly your interior defensive linemen, that are holding it down and allowing you to roam free so you can shoot the gaps and get those tackles for losses. But I think Bobby has also played a very conservative approach at times because he knows he's basically the last line of defense for this defense in order to get tackles and get runners down rather than going and shooting gaps and making plays. I think there's a lot of trust that goes into that for a guy like Bobby Wagner to feel comfortable doing it. Same thing in pass coverage. It's not just that he doesn't have the LOB around him to make him feel better or make him look good. It's about the trust that you have in pass coverage. And I think those two things go hand in hand when it comes to Bobby Wagner. And I hope now that you have everybody, the majority of this defense playing together and have had played together, I would like to see Bobby Wagner step that production up in those two areas because everything else, he's been fantastic.
All right, two of the biggest stories to come out of the first round of the NBA playoffs just so happened to happen yesterday evening. So you guys don't have to know what happened. If you weren't watching, if you weren't tuned in, if you're not like the big NBA fan, no big deal. I'm going to tell you what happened. And trust me, you are going to care about these stories because one is really entertaining and one might make you furious or make you defensive. We'll see what happens. But you are going to tell me whether it's inbounds or out of bounds. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, this is inbounds or out of bounds. Here's how it works. Jake and I will obviously be playing along, but you guys will as well, listening. So 710-710 is the Mac and Jack's text line. I'm going to ask you whether something is inbounds or out of bounds. If it's inbounds, completely fair behavior. Absolutely acceptable. Yeah, it's controversial a little bit, which is why it's in this segment in the first place, but you're personally fine with it. If it's out of bounds, there's no place for it in sports. You are done with this. You're writing it off. This person shouldn't have done it. Are you ready, Jake?
I'm ready.
All right,
here
we go.
Wait.
All right, we got two stories from the NBA playoffs first round. We also have a story thrown in here from OTAs with Aaron Rodgers. So let's get started in the NBA. Hawks Trae Young got some chance the other night for Madison fans in Madison Square Garden. I'm not going to say it on air. It's not radio friendly. That's your clue. It was "Forget Trae Young," a chant from Knicks fans in this game. Now, Trae Young shut them up. Hits a great shot, does the little shh sound to the fans. And, well, fans weren't having that because the next night there were these flyers going around instructing fans. I don't know who did this. I don't know who started it. Flyers going around instructing fans that the next chant, the chant for that night, would be "Trae Young is balding." Take a listen.
Balding. Trae Young's balding.
I mean, maybe it worked because the next one. So maybe do that more often. Now, it's a little controversial because obviously it's kind of like you wouldn't go up to just someone and say, you know, you're balding or whatever. But I think it's potentially completely fine. But I want to hear what you have to say first, Jake. So is this inbounds or out of bounds?
This is definitely inbounds. No doubt about it. This is inbounds.
Knocking it back inbounds.
The reason why this is inbounds is because as you look at their this is good old-fashioned trash talk. This is reminiscent of high school days with your rivals coming in town and talking some real good trash talk. I mean, look, this is the fun part about sports is, look, I think that they went after him. It was a little cold-blooded, but it wasn't over the top. This is definitely inbounds. I think this was a perfect amount of trash talk, Stacey.
I also think this is inbounds.
Knocking it back inbounds.
I think it's completely fair. Look, my favorite thing about trash talk is when it's either really funny or really weird. One of the best people I know at trash talk was this guy I went to high school with named Kay, and he would yell stuff that was so random, like, you still sleep in a twin bed, or like, I'll buy you Cinnabon for life if you make this shot, and everyone around him would always be dying because it was always so weird. That's the way that I look at this Trae Young is balding stuff. And you know what? It worked. Again, it worked.
It did.
Keep doing it.
It did.
Completely fair game.
It caught him off guard. It did its job. He's probably sitting there during the game as he was making his shots like, man, they are going after me right now. I can't believe that they're exposing my receding hairline right now. This is not fair at all. But absolutely, that's the whole point. Like, if you're a fan and you're going to the game, yeah, make a lot of noise. But it's even better when you can be creative and you can work together in terms of how to create that that home field advantage. I love this.
All right, listeners are on board. Mac and Jack's text line, universal inbounds. Inbounds, not too offensive. Inbounds, the first chant was out of bounds. True, I do agree with you on that one. Someone said, inbounds, this stuff makes sports more fun. Another person says, mental warfare. All right, next story here is going to also stay in the NBA, also in the first round of the playoffs. It's the playoff game between the Wizards and Philadelphia 76ers. Russell Westbrook is injured during the game, injures his ankle. He needs to walk to the locker room, and so he's being escorted to the locker room from the court, and a fan threw popcorn on the top of his head. Here's what Russell Westbrook had to say.
To be blatantly honest, man, this shit is getting out of hand, especially for me. Just the amount of disrespect, the amount of just fans is doing whatever they want to do. It's out of pocket, man. It's out of pocket. Seriously, like, in the other setting, I'm all for the fans enjoying the game and having fun. And, you know, it's part of sports. I get it. But there are certain things that cross the line. Any other setting, I know for a fact that fans, and they wouldn't come up, and a guy wouldn't come on the street and pour popcorn on my head because he know what happened.
Jake, I'll get us started with this one. This is so out of bounds.
Out of bounds.
Out of bounds. It's not funny trash talk. It's not even trash talk that, like, kind of crosses a line and is a little harsh like it was with Forget Trae Young. Again, radio-friendly version the first night. This is a fan throwing stuff. First of all, fans should never throw anything at players. You should never, there's another video of someone maybe spitting on Trae Young. You should never spit on players. Don't throw things at players. Don't throw things on the court. It's ridiculous. It's disrespectful. And you know what? It's cowardly. I guarantee you, this fan would never do anything to Russell Westbrook if he or she saw him in person. And the only reason they're doing it is because they know they can get away with it, at least in the moment. Because you know what Russell Westbrook can't do? Run into the stands and beat you up. You know what he should be allowed to do? Exactly that. Because you're a huge coward. And there's a type of person that does this. It's the type of person that does it when they know that there's no retribution for their harassment and their attacks. And you're out of bounds. You should not be allowed back there. I call lifetime ban.
Wow, Stacey calling for violence.
Up.
Okay,
I'm just saying,
wow.
This is a type of person. I hate this type of person.
No, you're 100% right, and I believe that this is out of bounds without question. This is easy. Look, we started this game off first day. We're going to make this easy on all of us in terms of making it definitive in terms of what's inbounds and what's out of bounds. This is completely out of bounds, and this is something, as Russell Westbrook said, you're not doing this to him. It just randomly on the street. You're not going and dumping popcorn on somebody's head. You're not going to do it with soda or water bottles or other things that I've seen, you know, thrown onto a football field, for example. This is unbelievably poor behavior. And if I am in the NBA, NFL, any professional team or professional sports, this kind of behavior, not only should it get you kicked out of the stadium, but it should ban you from ever going to games ever again in those stadiums. This type of behavior cannot happen. It cannot be acceptable. And if it's assault in real life, then it should be assault in a game atmosphere as well. I don't know why these people get protected in these certain situations. It doesn't make any sense. They're not gladiators out there. They're real human beings playing a professional sport. Let's keep it fun.
Yeah, you're a garbage human for that. All right, very last one. I'm going to let you just take this one yourself because we're right up against the clock. Last story here, Aaron Rodgers on vacation with his fiancée, Shailene Woodley, while the league is having OTAs. He is not present. Is it inbounds or out of bounds?
This is completely out of bounds. If you're Aaron Rodgers, if you are Aaron Rodgers, to me, I'm fine with you going and taking on the Green Bay Packers front office. If that's how you truly feel and you want to try and put your own destiny into your own hands, okay, that's you. I may not agree with it, but I respect your decision and ability to do that, unlike most people in the NFL. But you better be working. Right, you better be, you know, working and showing your teammates that you take this seriously. And everybody is not saying a word about Aaron Rodgers right now. Why? Because he won the MVP last year. But is he getting himself prepared to have another MVP type of season? Is he preparing himself to help his team get back to the NFC Championship game? And as of right now, the message that he is sending is no.
All right. Jason Churchill going to join us next. I want to be able to ask him about Taylor Trammell, whether he would make that trade, his outlook for the Mariners' future, and what he's seen so far from this club. And what's been somewhat of a nice little turnaround against Oakland. Last night was tough, but won the series. What is next for the Mariners? We're going to ask Jason Churchill coming your way next.